the four of Two Peas in a Drama Pod, where two twins like to talk about Asian dramas. This week, we'll be offering our thoughts on episode 17 and 18 of A Gentleman's Dignity and episode 15 and 16 of Gaxi Tao. We'll also be reviewing another drama with an extremely over-the-top but fun male lead, The Greatest Love, a Hong sister drama. Look forward to a good episode. Look to our notes for the songs we use and the recaps that will be posted. So let's go straight into the news. The teaser for Hyundai Lovers has been released, and I don't know about you guys, if anyone has seen the teaser, it's not much of a teaser. Looks more like a commercial for, like, Daytona Beach or something like that. It's a pretty bad teaser. It does not give you any indication of the feel of the drama at all. But I still have lots of faith in this drama. It sounds like it's going to be awesome. So hopefully the teaser is just bad and it will not be an indication of how good the drama is.
Teasers for Faith and To the Beautiful You were also released. The Faith one looks awesome. It looks like it's going to be a really good action drama. But not much was revealed about the To the Beautiful You one, so we'll have to wait for more.
Yeah, the Beautiful You one didn't really have much, although I do have high hopes for it, so.
Yeah, me too. And Mina and is then, supposed to play the track star.
Yeah, at first I thought he would be too young, just because I didn't envision him, but he looks like he could do it, maybe. If he has the right clothes and look and style and stuff. And then some more news about shows that are delayed and premieres that are postponed because of the Olympics. Gaxi will air one episode each week for the next 2 weeks. So episode 17th is going to be Wednesday, and then episode 18th is going to be the Wednesday after this on August 1st.
I can't believe so the Beijing Olympics but, were 4 years ago. Like, I feel like it's so quick.
I know. I can't believe it's only that long. I felt like it was, like, really long for some reason whenever we were watching it before. But, yeah, so at least Gaxi Tao is not completely postponed like A Gentleman's Dignity. A Gentleman's Dignity, as you all know, of course, will probably delay its final two episodes until after the Olympics. Sucks for us because at least the final two episodes unresolved. But at least episode 18 ended well for the most part for everyone, so that's good. Ghost will probably be delayed a week, and its final two episodes will air on August 8th and August 9th. I haven't been keeping up with that drama, but sad news for those people who have, especially since it's a mystery thriller. That will probably be torturous. Faith is set to premiere Monday, August 13th after the Olympics. To the Beautiful You has delayed its premiere and will start on Wednesday, August 15th, along with Arang and the Magistrate, which I'm really excited for because, what's her name? Kumiho Girl.
Who?
Shin Mina.
Oh, Shin Mina.
Is that her name?
Wait, Arang and the Shin Mina.
Yeah, she's in it, so that'll be really exciting. And then Five Fingers, will the drama that will replace A Gentleman's Dignity, will also premiere a week or two later, depending on when Gentleman's Dignity ends. Some sad news for you crazy drama lovers, but if you're a fan of the Olympics, at least you have something to hold you over until your favorite drama comes back on. I know what I will be watching while I wait for Gaxi Tao. And, well, Gaxi Tao, I think I'll be okay with one episode a week, but A Gentleman's Dignity, that's going to be awful.
Yeah, I'll probably have to watch a whole new one while I'm waiting for that. Well, we'll see. I'll probably catch up on shows. Good news for anyone who's been keeping up with Dr. Jean, which is not us, but I'm sure there's those of you out there. The extension's been confirmed, so it's now going to be extended 2 more episodes. Yay for Dr. Jean. In the realm of China, which if anyone's into Chinese dramas, which is not us, because I don't really like the production value of Chinese dramas, but normally they're like really warm, fuzzy feelings with not great camera work. So if you're for those kinds of stories, you can go for Chinese dramas. But Rudy Lin and
Jiro
Wang.
All you can say about them is that at least they'll end well, usually, and they won't throw any crazy twists in there.
Yeah. Rudy Lin and Jiro Wang are in an upcoming drama called Go, 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 and she plays, like, this screenwriter who writes a TV script, and Jiro Wang is supposed to be the main lead in it, except his acting sucks, so he's in danger of being cut from the show. to try and make sure that he stays on, he sucks up to Ruby Lynn and pretends to court her so that she won't drop him because she's the screenwriter. So that's that. Jiro Wong was in the Taiwanese version of Kanakini, and It Started With a Kiss, if anyone saw those. Good, that's all for news for this week. So
we'll return with our recap of Jackson's Hot episode 15 and 16 after this short music break.
Okay, guys, we're back.
Okay, so last week's episode of Gaxatal ended at a pretty intense moment. Like, okay, my heart was going at like 100 beats a minute. It was crazy. So if you all don't remember, Kanto was in the cell with Damsari, and he's like, I have to save Mokdan. Booty is in danger, and I have to save her. And Shinji saw it all. And so now Shinji's back in his office. His mind is blown. He pulls out the letter that Mokdan wrote to Gaxatal, and she signed it Booty. And he also flashbacks to the time when he said, when he was questioning Mokdan, he's like, the person who gave you this knife is Gaxatal, then. So he's working everything out in his head, and he's thinking, Kanto killed my brother? He can't believe it, but, and he really wants to talk himself out of it, but he just keeps remembering everything about Gaxatal, such as him knowing the office layout really well. There's just too much coincidence pointing to the fact that Kanto is Gaxatal. So Shinji starts laying a plan to try to catch Gaxatal / Kanto, who he thinks is Gaxatal. First of his plan includes having Goiso watch Kanto 24/7, and he also goes to the circus to ask Leader Cho for a special request that is a part of his trap. He asks Cho to tell Kanto where Leader Cho is going to meet Mokdan and the Freedom Fighters. And there's no way that he can let Kanto know that this is a trap. And so, of course, Kanto comes to the inn, and Leader Cho does as Shinji asks, because the lives of his circus members are at risk. Afterwards, Shinji goes to meet with his dad, Lala, and her bodyguard. Unbeknownst to me, Shinji had no idea that Lala was part of the Kishikai, and he was really surprised upon seeing her in the room. He wants to know what her relationship with Kanto is, and of course she gives a pretty good answer, saying that you need to get rid of Kono's hands and feet before getting rid of Kono, right? It is revealed to us that the president of Kishikai is coming soon, and as soon as he gets here, Kono will be disposed of. As a part of the Imperial Police's plan to continue trying to get people to stop liking Gaxatal, they say you can't wear any of the traditional white hanbok clothing, and so the police wreak havoc in the marketplace. They start pouring ink on anyone who wears white clothing. It makes me wonder if there's any other place in Jerusalem besides the marketplace, because that's pretty much the only place I see the police go to. Anyway, they start pouring ink on the people and beating people up. Kanto drives by, and he sees it. He disappears, and out appears Gaxatal! Woo! He beats the crap out of Goiso and the other officers, and leaves the villagers to pour ink all over the Japanese officers, thus getting their revenge. And Kanto leaves, knowing that his work is done. Moments later, Goiso comes into the office, and Shinji's like, what the heck happened? Goiso's like, we got attacked by Gaxatal, and of course Shinji rushes to the torture chamber to see where Kanto is, and of course, he is not there. There's more moments of where Shinji's trying to catch Kanto in his lives. Mokdan is wandering around town because she's not smart, and even though she's wanted, she thinks she can just go to the marketplace that's infested with Imperial officers, and she runs into Lala. They get into a catfight, girl power, woo, and of course, Lala overpowers her. Lala has some moves, apparently, didn't know she could fight, but yeah, she actually has some fight in her. She overpowers Mokdan, and satisfied, she calls Shinji, unknowingly ruining his trap and saying, I caught Mokdan. Of course, Shinji's angry and demands that he let her go because this is a trap to catch Gaxatal. Now, Shinji takes Kanto into his office and he's like, oh, we got Mokdan. Now all you have to do is catch her. So either Kanto shows up or Gaxatal shows up and saves Mokdan. Shinji asked Kanto to stay at the station to question Damsari, but of course it's Kanto. He's not just going to stay put. Lala ends up letting Mokdan go because she can't get in the way of Shinji's plan. Mokdan goes into the room at the Asuka Hotel that everyone always meets at. I feel like they need to change location because they meet at the same places. Of course they always get caught. Just as she's about to leave, Kanto comes in. He grabs her and is about to leave when Shinji also walks in the room, points the gun straight at Kanto, and is like, "It was you. Nice to meet you. Gaxital. Dun dun dun." Of course, I don't really understand how this plan worked because he didn't catch Gaxital. He just caught Kanto coming into the room, and you could assume that he's Gaxital, but he doesn't have enough evidence to prove it. Okay, no, on to episode like 16. Seven, so Shinji walks in, and he's like, "Glad to meet you, Gaxital." But Kanto brushes off his accusation, saying that he is saving Mokdan, not because he's Gaxital, but because he loves this woman. Either way, that's pretty suspicious. Shinji arrests him and takes him into interrogation. And Uyano Reef, or Lala, finds out that Kanto was caught in place with Gaxital. And she's not surprised that he's not Gaxital because she thinks that he saved Mokdan because he loves her. So, Kanto's excuse worked. In the interrogation room, Shinji's seriously beginning to question why he ever thought Kanto was Gaxital, as Kanto keeps throwing out all these pretty good reasons as to why, of course, he isn't Gaxital, such as the main one being Damsari tried to kill him at the Angel Club. Shinji rushes over to the Angel Club and gets all the employees and eventually finds out that indeed, the men who tried to kill Gaxital, or who tried to kill Kanto, was with Damsari, therefore proving Kanto innocent. If Kanto was actually Gaxital, then Damsari would not have tried to kill him. Kanto is released. Yay! And now that Mokdan and Damsari are caught, they have two tools that they can use to try to catch Gaxital. But Shinji and Kanto haven't been able to get any information out of either of them, so Kono goes to interrogate the two himself. Back in the torture chamber, Mokdan and Damsari are having their moment together as a family, but it is interrupted by Kono. For a moment there, you think Kono is actually going to kill Mokdan, saying, "Let's put it in the box so that we can get Damsari to talk." But just before she gets in there, Kono's like, "It'd be a waste to have you die like this." Her life is spared. She hugs her father in relief. Kono sends Damsari to the penitentiary, and Mokdan gets sent to the prosecutor's office. Meanwhile, Shinji plots to have Damsari killed, for real, executed in public, as a message to the Korean people, and as a way to get Mokdan to talk. He runs this through Father and Lala, and they both agree that he should do it, because Kono's not going to be there for long, so there's no point in following his orders. Kondo hurries and tries to get Damsari to the penitentiary, telling Mokdan that he will have Damsari escape before he gets to the penitentiary. Wow, now Kanto's true colors are really showing, which is nice, which is nice for Damsari and company. And there's more to Kanto than meets the eye. The truck with Damsari drives out of the station, and three of Damsari's freedom fighters follow the car. In the woods, a battle ensues, and Kanto actually starts shooting his own comrades, therefore proving that he really is on Damsari's side. Damsari is beginning to see him in a new light. Just as Kanto is about to hand Damsari over to the freedom fighters, Shinji shoots one of the freedom fighters and catches Kanto in the act of releasing Damsari. What's going to happen? We don't know because that's the end of the episode. What were your thoughts about episodes 15 and 16?
So I feel like these two episodes were pretty much just Kanto trying to prove his innocence the entire time, almost. Well, first getting into trouble, and then just trying to prove his innocence. And I really hope that they don't try and make this a continued thing where one episode Kanto gets into deep trouble and raises Shinji's suspicions, and then the next episode Kibi proves himself innocent again. Yeah, I really hope that's not the progression, and I want them to return to the Gaxital, Korean rebel things, where it's trying to get Korea's independence, / have his own agenda, rather than him trying to clean up after his mistakes. So, I really hope that they take it that way, but this is 28 episodes, so we could have a long way to go.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the fact that Kangto is beginning to show what he really is all about. He's not going to be completely alone. But also, yeah, I want him to get back to kicking butt and kicking Davikishu Kai, because that was what his brother was about, not trying to cover up his tracks and save people based on his personal feelings.
I'm really hoping, though, that after this episode, if they don't kill Damsari off, which they better not, Damsari will finally believe that Kangto is not as bad as they seem, as he seems, and maybe he'll finally get the rebels on his side when no one is on his side. The one thing, though, that annoys me about this show, and it was really evident during the scene with the ink and stuff, is I guess we're supposed to root for Korea, and I don't know if they're doing this on purpose, but sometimes when the Koreans retaliate against the Imperial officers, I feel like they do just as bad things. A little conflicted in my emotions, because I'm like, you're retaliating just as badly as the Korean, or as the Japanese are trying to retaliate against you. So I don't know if that's just something where they don't want people to take sides, but if they don't want to do that, I'd rather them go the good route rather than both sides do bad things route.
Yeah, I don't like how it feels like what used to be no concrete good or bad is now there seems to be a good and there seems to be a bad. And all Shunji is kind of holding on as like the good teacher that he used to be. He's quickly descending into madness. I don't want him to be a bad character, but it's so hard not to hate him with the way that the writers are portraying him.
We'll see what happens in the next few episodes. I'm really hoping, though, they get back to the Korean rebel front and not the Kangto proving his innocence front. Okay, so on to A Gentleman's Dignity. Next up, we'll be recapping episode 17 and episode 18 of A Gentleman's Dignity. Okay, so we're back, guys. So, episode 17. These two episodes are the last few episodes before the Olympics, so you guys have a long wait ahead of us. But episode 17, essentially, the opening scene is just them discussing their superheroes, which is so appropriate considering that The Dark Knight Rises came out this weekend, and Doji's happens to be Batman. That was just an entertaining scene overall. So we're just left with the message.
Oh, yeah. I loved that scene.
Yeah, it was really funny. We're just left with the message, whose heroes can we be today? So, and then we're back to where we ended off at episode 16. And this episode, Kim Do-jin and Isu's relationship gets back to the way it was, fortunately, because Do-jin decides to accept her shoes. He shows that he's coming back to her when he wears them, which is the same thing she did. Although the first time she did that, it was a lie, but not for Mr. Kim Do-jin. So Isu and Do-jin are back. Sarah and Tae-san are back. And now the conflict turns to Yoon and Mary, because Mary has to go back to America. After her scene at the memorial with Yoon's ex-wife, Tae-san's telling her that he can't forgive her anymore and she needs to go back to America. So what is Yoon going to do now? Because he's pushed into this corner to where he has to make a decision. And we also see that Jung-rok and Min-sik's relationship, although it would appear that it gets better, Min-sik's slowly deteriorating because of her distrust of Jung-rok, even though he is coming back to her. But he does his best to convince her that he's there for her, and they have this really nice scene at the hospital when Min-sik finds out that the chances of them having a child are slim, and Jung-rok's there for her, so that was a really great scene.
We also get some father-son time with Dojin and Colin, because Dojin tells Colin that he's dating Isu. Colin is really happy for his father, and we see that he didn't want to be in his father's way, but he wanted to be his son, and he wanted to make sure that both of those things would work out. So it makes him really happy that Dojin has decided to date his homeroom teacher. At the end of the episode, Yoon finally makes his decision about Mayari, and just as she's leaving for America at the airport, we see Yoon come in and grab her, and he drags her outside and at the car. He pulls her in for a hug. Woo! Finally, some progress with this relationship. And that was the end of episode 17. Episode 18, we get more scenes with Dojin and Isu, which are awesome because they're back to their old selves. The playful banter that we know and love, and also just the two of them being ridiculous. We get more of those scenes, and those scenes make me really happy. We also hear Isu talk a little bit about her childhood, and Dojin talks about his as well. And while Dojin had a really great childhood, Isu didn't. And we just see them talk to each other about their past, and hopefully a hint of how Dojin's going to be able to heal it for Isu. For Jungrok and Minsook, Minsook slowly deteriorates during this episode as well, continuously doubting Jungrok. And finally, it comes to a point where she confesses to him that she can't be with him anymore because she doesn't know what to believe. And she wants to divorce him before she loses her mind, which she's already slowly doing. And this was a heartbreaking scene for me because we see all of Minsook's insecurities, and we're not sure if she's going to be able to overcome them because Jungkook was essentially her life. And while there were many playful scenes where she threatens to divorce him, they were all empty threats, but we're finally seeing that this time it's much deeper than that. It's a question of trust. Yoon confronts Taesan, and he obviously has to tell Taesan that he's decided to date Mayari. He can't suppress his feelings anymore. Taesan, obviously, he's angry, but he's also disappointed in Yoon and fearful for his younger sister and his younger sister's future. And we see throughout this episode the two of them butting heads, trying to come to a reconciliation, but unable to because the person at question is Mayari. At the end of the episode, Dojin is still trying to make sure that Isu's reputation doesn't suffer, so he invites all of her teachers out to dinner, and obviously with the amount of money he's showering on them, everyone likes Dojin. Outside in their car, they're looking at each other awkwardly. In order to try and diffuse the awkwardness, Dojin turns on the radio, but every song
I thought it was sexual tension, not awkwardness.
Whatever, sexual tension, but whatever. And every song that's playing is like a romantic love song. And the last song that plays is G-Dragon's Don't Go Home. Or G-Dragon and Top's Don't Go Home. Obviously, the radio didn't help out much with their predicament. And so we end with Dojin saying, or Isu says, we end with Isu saying, "When I hear this song later, I'll remember today." And Dojin replies, "I can make it more memorable, implying that he wants Isu to go home with him. And episode end. So, what'd you think about these two episodes?
I was really happy that Yoon and Mayari got together because I've been waiting for that to happen since, like, forever ago. And, but at the same time, yeah, he's, like, facing a really big predicament right now with Taesan. And I also am wondering what's going to happen with, like, Dojin's memory loss problem. Because I thought that was supposed to be a big deal. And now it's like, actually, he had a family, like, he had a happy childhood. And
I'm sure that'll come back. at some point, but there's only two episodes left, so I don't know how they're going to wrap that up. The thing about Yoon and Mary, though, that I'm still don't think they're properly addressing is the fact that, okay, Tae-san is obviously an obstacle, but society is even more of an obstacle because they're talking about a pretty large age gap here, and they haven't really addressed that, so I don't know how they're going to do that in these final two episodes and still either make Yoon and Mary happy together, or if they don't, which I'm sure they'll stay together, how they're going to address those obstacles.
I don't think there has been any indication that they're going to address that issue. And, like, the only way that I can think about them addressing it is because we don't even know who Mayari's friends are. Like, honestly, I don't see anyone that would, from Mayari's social network, that is going to object it. Although, Yoon, definitely, because of all his, like, lawyer friends. But we haven't really, like, again, like, we haven't really seen that much outside of, like, this initial social network of Dojin and his buddies and Isu and her buddies. And then the only people outside of that I've noticed are, like, her teacher friends.
Oh, and one other thing that I thought was really interesting about these past few episodes is what they bring to light with Min-suk and Jung-rang's relationship. Because it's not a question of love, because obviously the two like love each other. But I think it's interesting that it's a question of trust for Min-suk and the fact that she can't stop doubting Jung-rang. And I wonder how they're going to overcome this in the last two episodes, because I really hope that whatever they choose to do, it ends really well for those two. I kind of wish that they extended A Gentleman's Degree, just because the relationships in the show are so complex that I don't see, like, it'd be really, it's possible to extend the show with, you know, wrapping up all the other things that we could find out about Isu's past childhood, and then Kim Do-jin's memory problem, and then how Yoon and Mayari's relationship's going to play out, and also just Min-suk and Jung-rang's relationship, and then even Do-jin and Do-jin's relationship with Colin, and then Colin and Dong-yeon, and I'm just like, oh, there's so much more that we could get from this show, but they're not extending it, so I want to see how they end this nicely so that, you know, everything ties together, and although we'll still probably wonder what the rest of these people do with their lives.
Yeah, there's lots of strings that need to be tied up at this point, and there's, like, just a lot of, like, new plots that they've created that haven't really, like, been resolved, like, fully, and they only have two episodes left to do it, so.
Yeah, I really hope that they end this show well, just because I'm always going to wonder what happened to the rest of them after these 20 episodes in, but at least I want some kind of satisfactory conclusion, just to provide some closure. Okay, so continuing on, the drama, next up we are going to review The Greatest Love, which is another Hong sisters drama. This show also has an extremely memorable male lead in terms of character, so that's why we chose this show, after a short music break. So, we're back, guys. That song was I Can't Drink by Baek Ji-young, and that woman is the queen of soundtrack ballads. She makes, the best ballads, and I feel like shows are, whatever she makes a ballad for, that show's automatically gonna be popular.
Her songs just bring that much more feel into the show.
And, like, they just, for really emotional shows, it's just, like, cue Baek Ji-young, and the music does the talking. Because she did it for Iris, did it for Secret Garden, now The Greatest Love.
She did one for The Princess's Man.
And The Princess's Man, another great show. She just chooses which drama she wants to sing for. She's got great taste in dramas. But on to our review of The Greatest Love. So this, as we said, was a Hong sisters drama. So you can expect comedy.
The Greatest Love is set in the entertainment industry, and it's about Gu Ae-jung, who used to be a popular member of the girl group National Treasure Girls or something along those lines. But 10 years ago, she fell from grace because of a scandal that happened with the group. And so now she's just a washed-up has-been who is trying to provide for her family through occasional appearances on variety shows. Her brother's like her manager. So she's fallen a long way from where she was in the past at the top of her game as a National Treasure girl. She also, not only she also has a, she also lives with her father and her nephew, and she's really the only one that provides a living for her family. On the other hand, Dokojin is the most beloved star in the nation, and he is at the top of his game right now. One of the most popular people in the entertainment industry in the show. In addition to having several CFs, promotions, everyone wants to be associated with Dokojin. And the two of them meet coincidentally because they belong to the same company. And so they first meet by accident when she runs into his van and she doesn't know that it's his van. And then from there, the hilarity ensues because they continue to bump into each other. And she finds out an unfortunate act made by Dokojin in which he bribes Peter Jason, a director in the show who's an American director, and Dokojin really wants to get on to his movies, so he sends him a bottle of wine. But everything's about images in the show, and they make it pretty evident through the first episode that they need to keep up these appearances to be popular. And obviously, if anyone finds out that Dokojin tried to bribe an American director so that he would cast him, his popularity would go down the drain. Because Gu Ae-jung finds out this important piece of information, she's able to get him to go onto a talk show with her, and then from then on, the chances that they meet just increase. And the show, while initially they loathed each other, Gu Ae-jung more so because Dokojin is a very hard character to fall in love with when you're as down to earth as Gu Ae-jung. And so this is a story about their love, essentially. Dokojin begins to fall for Gu Ae-jung, and then he works to try and win her heart. Throughout this show, there's so many different elements to the show that make it funny. So many different obstacles, and one of them is most obviously the different levels between Dokojin and Gu Ae-jung, because Dokojin is at the top of his game. Gu Ae-jung is at the very bottom of the ladder, like lower than the lowest rung. So they have to overcome that in the show. In addition to just their personality differences, and watching the progression of their relationship is one of the greatest aspects of this show and the most nicest things to watch. Other characters in the show, Kang Se-ri is another star who used to be in the same girl group that Gu Ae-jung was in. And back in the past, she was nobody. And now in the present, Se-ri is the one that everyone wants to be like. So she's kind of there as a third character who had dated Dokujin briefly, but now they're just dating to keep appearances. But obviously she has ties to both Dokujin and Guejong. And during the show, they kind of reveal what she has to do with the present day. The other male love interest in the show is Yoon Pilju, who's a oriental doctor. He's kind of in his own little world. So he meets Guejong, and he starts to fall in love with her. And so with him and Dokujin, those are the two main male love interests. And he's much less outrageous than Dokujin is, so he's a more believable character. And he's a very, he's a likable character. So there's two pretty strong male leads in this show, but Guejong is one of the strongest characters to this show, and she's a very interesting female lead. That's really the premise of this show so far. It just follows the lives of Guejong, Dokujin, Yoon Pilju, Kang Seri, and their life as in the entertainment industry, and how the love between Dokujin and Guejong play out.
What did you think was interesting or memorable about the show? Did you like it or?
Well, my favorite thing is obviously the Hongsuses are really good at metaphors, and I just love how like they brought in so many metaphors from the fact that this guy had heart surgery and this girl sang a song about your heart beating, and then just like so many things like the turtle thing and just like so many different metaphors that all just tied together and connected to earlier episodes. I just love how things in later episodes connected to earlier episodes, and it was just so plain funny. Like, who can forget the heartbreaker karaoke routine or the panty?
Yeah, this is definitely one of the funniest dramas I've seen in a while. And not only is it funny, but it has actual substance too. So all of the characters, especially the main female lead, has problems. And you're just empathetic towards her because of the way that she's portrayed by the actress. And then, okay, the main lead, Dokujin, is so over the top. It's funny. It's hard to believe he's a real person, but you get drawn into him just because this is not the fall-in-love-at-first-sight drama. They develop their relationship towards each other slowly, and the way he tries to win the main lead's heart is funny and endearing at the same time.
Yeah, it's so funny, and just like, he's like, I can't believe I like this person. Like an internal battle, but really funny, and not even like in the serious way. And it's just so, it's crazy how so much misfortune and misunderstanding can fall on one person.
Yeah, and that's another thing about this drama, because this drama actually has like a little bit, gives a little bit of insight into the entertainment world, and actors and actresses and idols have really hard lives from the way this drama portrays it. And it tries to reveal that there's actually real people behind the facade. And the way that the public misunderstands so much that happens to the people in these drama, because it's set in the entertainment industry, is, I think it's a nice commentary about the kind of lives that people live.
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know how true it is, but it definitely gives you some insight into it. But, like, all in all, like, I don't even care that, like, the characters are, like, really great, and even, like, I'm not really sure how character development went, but it was just such a funny show that it didn't even matter to me. It was just so outrageous.
Yeah, the main lead, Dokujin, his character was so over the top at first. It was really hard to take him seriously slash like him at all.
Like, does he actually have emotions? And then just those scenes when he does become emotional, it's just like, dude, you're awesome. And I don't think it could have been pulled off as well if it weren't for the actor that played Dokujin. He was just crazy and willing to try anything.
Yeah, I think he really, like, got into his element, though, after the first few episodes, because it was like, wow, this unbelievable character is actually believable. So, yeah. It was his character was one of the funniest components to the show, and then Gu-ae-jung, the main lead's character, kind of tied it all together. So the two, like the love interest in this drama, actually works.
Okay, guys, to kind of sum up everything that, to kind of sum up our impression of this show and our thought on it, we've come up with a rating system, so it'll be easier for people to know whether we like a show or not. The bottom level is not worth your time. So if we think a show is not worth your time, it means that you shouldn't spend any more time watching it. Drop it immediately. Don't pick it up at all. The next level up from that is borderline, which it has some moments that shine, but mostly it's going to be up to you whether you like it or not. It's a hit or miss show, and for us, it was pretty much a miss except for a few moments. The one above that is going to be Warm Fuzzies, which, not a masterpiece, not the greatest K-drama in the world, but, or not the greatest drama in the world, but still a fun watch, and it's still pretty enjoyable. Flawed Masterpiece was a great show, just has a few, like, maybe plot flaws, character flaws, just a few flaws to make it not essentially a masterpiece, which is the highest level that we're going to rate a show, and the best that you can get. So if a show is a masterpiece, we really loved it. We think everyone should go see it. There's something in it for everyone. So, actually, maybe not everyone, but if you like the type of shows we do, it's definitely for you. So we're going to start that off with this week with a review of The Greatest Love, and we've decided to rate The Greatest Love masterpiece. So this is a great drama. You should definitely go and see it. Throughout this week, we'll be posting GIFs on our Tumblr from The Greatest Love, so you guys get to see all the awesome scenes in it. One of my favorite things to do is actually go onto YouTube and watch MVs. Fan-made music videos for the show, for shows that I might potentially watch, because I think, okay, they put the best scenes in, but also if you watch the beginning scenes, they're not spoilers, so I do that a lot, and I might be putting a few choice music videos that I really enjoyed that I think are a good impression of the show, just to get you guys to watch it. But The Greatest Love, masterpiece. So, that's all we have for this week's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Hopefully, we're going to try our best to release our episodes early, because I do know it is a little late in the week. But I hope you guys enjoyed today's show and our review of The Greatest Love, in addition to our recaps. Look for our extended recaps on the website. And again, if you have any requests, feedback, anything like that, you have a show you'd like to watch, you know, you have questions for us, email us at 2peasinadramapod@gmail.com or go to our Tumblr Askbox, and we'll try and get back to you. But thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Yo, turn it up. 어색한 분위기는 싫어. 시계침 소리가 원래 저리도 컸을까. 목에 침 넘어가는 소리만 들려 뭐랄까. Look, baby 난 그저 너와 아침을 맞고 싶어. 오늘이 밤이 다가기 전에 둘만의 secret party. 근데 넌 like Cinderella 12시 땡치면 집에 갈라. Hey, 혼자인 밤은 길어. Calling it up 너의 부모님께. Hey, 센 척하지만 맘에 걸려.
SOS 진도는 멀어.
오히려 잠깐 나 왜 이래 지치해 나 어지러워 잠이 들어.
집에 가지마 baby 너에게 줄 선물이 여기 있는데.